From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of January, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here too. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, that with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Along the way, we'll preview tomorrow's USDA reports. It's the January set of numbers. These are the final crop production figures for the last growing season, along with the December 1 grain stocks. That's the first quarterly report for the year. And the WASD, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, that will tie it all together. And we'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Oh, and by the way, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org at 11 o'clock tomorrow. You'll find those numbers updated in the tables there. We'll also send out a newsletter, and you can follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, Dan, thanks for being with us. Tomorrow, the United States Department of Agriculture has a triple witching hour of sorts with three reports out: crop production, WASD, and the DEIS 1 grain stocks, or the first quarterly report for the marketing year. Which of those numbers are you watching most closely?
Well, it's the stocks report that really is the main report, because then they back out of that and come up with a production number, because they can kind of, they know what September 1 stocks were. They look at what December 1st stocks were. Then they subtract out what was exported, what was crushed, either for ethanol or for soybean meal and oil. They can subtract all that out of there, and then they kind of look at their yields and see whether or not the yields match what they've been having and whether or not the acres. So from that stocks number, you'll end up possibly getting harvested acreage adjustments. You could possibly get yield adjustments on it either way. It could go up or it could go down. And then it basically kind of gives you a good footing on what kind of underlying domestic demand that we have in place, and whether or not USDA's supply-demand tables are on target. Now, everybody's been kind of watching the export pace recently. And again, today's sales, while corn and soybeans might have been within expectations, they're running well underneath the level that they need to run to meet USDA's supply-demand projections that they came out with in December. Wheat was terribly low today, and that's why it started off sharply lower. Now it's kind of recovered a little bit going into the report. But I think a lot of people are, or at least the way the market has been performing, I think they think that we could see some larger supplies, definitely going to be reflected in lower export demand. And everybody's kind of bracing, I think, for some larger ending stocks levels as we look down the road. And I think that's been the big killer of this market. I mean, especially soybeans. Well, soybeans had a little bubble up there in December due to some weather worries in South America, but then the weather problems have kind of gone away, and everything kind of seems to be on par, at least for right now, and that's why soybeans have taken such a hit from December 1st levels. Whereas if you look at corn really hasn't had much of a hit. Actually, when you look at Central Illinois cash prices, we're right up against the highs for the marketing year. I think Central Illinois cash prices are 3.25 as an average or so, and that's kind of been what our high has been over the past several weeks since we made our lows back in, where we made our cash low, I guess, in September, And then we kind of retested it there a little bit in November, and now we've kind of went higher. But then when you go over and take a look at Central Illinois cash soybean values, and you can really see that we've had a major decline off our highs that we had there kind of like in early December. We were up around 970 area, and after yesterday's decline, we're down to 910. So we've kind of lost, you know, 60 cents in the cash market in soybeans. But corn, you know, when you look at it on a futures chart, it's basically a sideways market between 340 and 360. And the cash is kind of grinding steadily higher. But in the futures market, we keep losing the carry. You know, as when December expired and March became, March fell back to where December was trading. So now the soybeans is definitely, when you look at a soybean chart, you've got to be a little worrisome because it does have a bearish bias to it. And you could begin to argue that there could be a leg down in the soybean market. And I think that probably is, I've been one to thinking that soybean acres are going to rise in the United States above corn acres. And then if South America has a good crop, you just can't have, I think, $3.25 cash corn and $9 soybeans. Something's got to give. Either corn is going to come up in value or beans are going to go down in value. I think that ratio is out of whack, and it's headed back to be more historically or more in line. And if you do that, if you got $3 cash corn, then you're going to be talking about maybe $7.50 beans, which I really hate to say that, but we'll see tomorrow if we end up raising carryouts, and we'll see what the USDA does with the world numbers with Brazil and Argentina. But we just got too much supply around, and what the market is basically trying to do at these lower levels, they either find new demand or discourage people from planting acres. And I don't think prices are probably low enough yet to discourage any kind of cutback in acres, but we may see some of that come spring. It'll still be a Mother Nature's market. I mean, we're just at the point right now that in order for this market to go higher, we're going to have a major production hit somewhere along the line in order to get this market to go up, or otherwise it's going to continue to stay at these levels and maybe probably grind even lower, and that'll depend upon what kind of crop we raise next or this coming year.
You mentioned that the cash price of corn was leading futures or making up some of the work. What does that tell you about the marketplace?
It tells you that you do have a good, steady demand for corn. And of course, it's coming from ethanol, good feed usage, a lot of livestock on feed. So you do have good, solid domestic demand kind of offsetting some of this slow down in exports, whereas beans are more of an export market. If you don't have exports, then beans kind of drifts lower, and that's kind of what we're seeing. Beans does have a daily U.S. consumption, so much as soybean meal, you know, as far as livestock feed goes, but beans are very dependent on exports, much more than probably corn is, and that's probably why you're seeing the steady grind. Now, this new tax law that they got, I understand that there's a problem with that, the way it's written, and I don't know if they'll get a fix to it, but it's going to really make it a problem. Farmers are going to want to sell all of their grain to co-ops so they can deduct that tax provision where they can deduct 20% of their sales and basically erase their income tax liability if they sell it to a co-op. But if they sell it to a private grain company, then they're not eligible to take that tax exemption. So there's a lot of worry in Washington whether or not the Senate can get this fixed. or otherwise, the larger grain companies and your private grain companies are going to have to buy their inventory from the co-op. So it's really a mess right now, and I'm sure Congress really didn't intend it to be this way. But when you make when you have those major hiccups in legislation, sometimes it's pretty hard to go in there and get them corrected. But I know everybody's in Washington right now trying to get that corrected. So, you know, farmers are probably going to want to sell to co-ops, and the private industry, the private guys are going to have a hard time originating grain until we get this tax thing kind of cleared up.
Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again next week. I appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, President Donald Trump is expected to stress in his State of the Union message at the end of this month the importance of waterway infrastructure and a sweeping new infrastructure package that remains contentious over its funding. Lawmakers and lobbyists like Waterways Council Senior Vice President Deborah Calhoun have been arguing that funding should not have to wait while Democrats and Republicans fight it out over whether to fund such projects publicly, privately, or both.
What they're essentially saying is let's not wait to come together on the details of an infrastructure bill. Here is a critical program that needs to get finished in terms of pre-construction work and then to go to construction within a year after that.
Congress okayed work to upgrade the Upper Mississippi River locks and dams and restore the river environment more than 10 years ago, but never appropriated funding. Calhoun says the new work is critical for agriculture.
It's critical for the farm products that are coming downriver and all those agri inputs that are moving upriver. And so this is a very important program that needs to continue, and they don't need to wait for an infrastructure bill to see that happen.
The White House is expected to soon release the broad outlines of the president's infrastructure plan that would be funded with some $200 billion in federal seed money and other incentives to leverage $800 billion in private funding. Democrats want a federally funded building program. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., and with the president, who continues to push for limiting the number of foreign-born workers in the United States. The success of the H-2A agricultural guest worker program, however, is sending a different message. In fiscal 2017, the Labor Department received a record number of applications for the H-2A visas, upward of some 200,000. That's an almost 15% increase from fiscal 2016, reports Politico. 11% of the producers to request certification focus on crops of berries. Apple and tobacco growers followed as the top crops occupations seeking H-2A visas. The North Carolina Growers Association, which helps members contract foreign labor, submitted almost 12,000 applications for visas to help mostly tobacco growers. By the numbers, in just over a decade, the agricultural guest worker program has grown rapidly amid chronic labor shortages in the industry. In 2016, more than 130,000 H-2A visas were issued to workers, marking a 160% increase in the H-2A jobs from 2006, that according to the Economic Policy Institute. Let's move now from Washington to Nebraska, where Costco's new poultry processing plant contracts directly with poultry farmers and then processes their broiler chickens exclusively for Costco stores, refuses to share a copy of the contract it's giving new poultry farmers in the state. That's according to John Hansen. He's the president of the Nebraska Farmers Union, and he's been trying to help his state's farmers negotiate their first contracts with the warehouse giant. After Costco announced that Lincoln Premium Poultry would build a large processing plant in Fremont, Nebraska, to provide broiler chickens to Costco, local farmers have been eagerly signing up, drawn by what seemed to be attractive contracts. But Hansen, whose group has been negotiating contracts for farmers for decades, noted that many of these farmers did not have experience with poultry and weren't aware of the hazards of the industry that farmers have experienced. Here's the reason it all may be a worry after last year's move by USDA that scrapped the interim final GPSA rules that gave farmers the right to sue companies like Premium Poultry. Hansen says that poultry growers need to be especially vigilant about getting fair deals. He added that since Costco was working with farmers through this newly created company, These negotiations could foretell the future for poultry farmers. And finally today, we'll stay with the livestock industry, where pork exports in November of last year set the highest ever monthly value record, while beef export value took another step toward a likely full-year value record. November pork exports totaled nearly 224,000 metric tons, down slightly from a year ago, and November export value was a record high of $615.6 million, up some 5% year over year, and just the fourth time monthly export value has topped $600 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, thanks, Matt. You all hunkered down for tonight's rough weather?
Yeah, I reckon so. I'm actually going to be going down to speak south of Newton, Illinois tonight for Olney Bank. And, they're expecting a pretty good-sized crowd, so hopefully the weather doesn't get in the way of that. Not a fun time to talk markets necessarily, but I always like to get together with a lot of producers and kind of throw some things at them, and hopefully they don't throw anything back.
Do you have a primary message for them tonight?
Yeah, I mean, my message essentially, we all know that it's not a beautiful situation right now. Essentially, we have to do our math, do our homework, know where we can make money. And if we look like we're going to have a rougher year than normal, I guess one of the main things I want to ask folks is what they're willing to do to stem the tide, because obviously cutting back, in the way that we're living, first of all, is something we've talked about for a long time. But, the other thing a lot of folks are talking about right now is just either trying to find a way to tap into their skill set or do something to bring a little more income into the farm. And I think off-farm incomes have become a pretty hot topic. So I think we have to ask ourselves, if we can't make lemonade out of lemons, what are we willing to do, to make sure that our farm stays stable?
That's a pretty tough message, given what we have been through previous to this with the really high incomes they had in mid to late teen 2000s.
Yeah, absolutely. We basically took an enormous hit, basically large bubble. Whenever you look at the kind of net incomes that we had across the Corn Belt, it was huge. But whenever you look at some of the stuff the USDA shows us as far as what the net income looks like, if you go far enough back, going into the negative territory or break even territory, it's not something that we haven't done before. Now, it's not pleasant, it's not fun, but certainly it's something that we can get through. We're just going to have to be do whatever we can, use every tool that we've got in the toolbox, and maybe even create some new ones, because desperate times sometimes call for desperate measures.
If I remember correctly, the last time we were close to something like this would have been a time that producers remember tightening their belt but making it through. That would have been the late 1990s to the very early 2000s. So not quite a desperate time, but just a time that we really have to tighten the belt down.
Yeah, absolutely, because there's no givens with this market. A lot of folks are saying that with the report here coming on Friday that surely they can't take these markets any lower. But, unfortunately, the big money players are simply wanting to make money. And so if they feel like they can pile onto their shorts, which are both in the corn and bean market on a net basis for the funds, if they feel like they can make more money by piling on, they're going to do it. And the unfortunate reality is that they really don't care if we make money or if we don't. And so we have to be as managing as much risk as we can at low prices, just like we did with high prices, because there's a lot you can still do in the market. There's still carry, there's still opportunities out here, but sitting in our hands is probably not the best avenue to take right now.
Give me one quick strategy producers might try to deploy for the new crop, whether it's corn or soybeans.
Well, with the soybeans, I still think you can straight up sell some beans. People are worried about it. But the other thing a lot of folks have done is, they bought a put option close to the market, sold a put option a dollar into the market, and sold a call $1.50, $1.40 above the market, and done that for 15, 20 cents. And it's not a bad way to have a floor in place just in case a really bad scenario unfolds.
Hey, thanks, Matt, for being with us, and have a safe drive to Olney tonight.
Yep, thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, let's start over the last several weeks with the same place we've been, in Argentina. It had been dry, though I take it rainfall is on the horizon that may alleviate the problems there. What do we know today?
Well, there is a drought in place in Argentina. There is no doubt about that. If you look at rainfall over the last 90 days, at least 70% of their corn, soybean, and sunflower production were drier than normal over that period. If you just take a look at the last 60 days, that number increases to more than 95% of those crops. So we've had very little rainfall over the last 60 days. Now, under normal circumstances, this would be a major highlight of the corn and soybean markets. But the one thing that's holding everything back, as far as a concern goes for everybody, is that there's a lot of rain on the near-term horizon. All indications suggest that we'll start to see some rains this weekend, and then more so in 5 to 10 days from now. As long as that comes to fruition, we'll alleviate drought in a lot of these areas. And the one thing to keep in mind is that the timing of rainfall on these different crops is very important. You can be dry for a long period of time, but if you get rains at just the right moment, that can help to alleviate the situation rather quickly. Now, it's debatable whether or not this rain is going to arrive in time for first crop corn. A lot of that corn was planted back in October. They've been in a drought throughout their entire growing cycle, and it's been very hot this week with highs in the mid-90s. That heat is going to continue until these storms arrive this weekend. So first crop corn, that's probably having some stress at this moment. But soybeans, their key phases of development don't begin for about 2 to 3 weeks. So this rain is pretty well-timed for them. But it all has to happen, Todd. If these events don't materialize as expected, then all of a sudden it'll be a totally different story. But again, as of right now, it looks like these rains are going to happen. And that's what we're going to make sure happens over the next 3-4 days here at T-Storm Weather.
Here in the United States, the weather for some of the winter wheat areas has not been the best in the world. And again, we're dealing with dry conditions. What can you tell us about those areas?
Well, we can run the same statistics on U.S. wheat and come to some interesting conclusions. If you look at the last 90 days and then isolate out the hard red winter wheat crop, 83% of that crop was drier than normal over the last 90 days. Our records go back to August of 2011, and we've never had a number that high in that period of time. So this is unusual how dry it's been over the last 90 days. Now, we are in a La Nina event, and that La Nina is expected to weaken over the next couple of months. We've seen a similar type of La Nina 5 times since 1960, and of those 5 times, 3 of them also had a drought that was in place as of this time of the year here in the middle of January. Only one of those years, 1996, had a drought that continued into the spring. And so that's one thing we need to watch. But the more important thing that this information tells us is that even though we have a drought now and we also have a La Nina, we can't put the two together and clearly state that this drought is going to continue. There is evidence that these things break in the spring, and we'll need this to break because we know that the last time it happened, and it didn't break, we had a bad crop. So rains will be important here in a couple of months.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago and helps us wrap up our Thursday edition of the program. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.